It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, Tarncast. It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, Tarncast. It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. This is the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, the Tarncast.
Well, hey everyone, thanks for coming. Welcome to my show. If I knew what my theme music sounded like, I would kind of hum along with it right now. But obviously, this is my, I've gotten this show and it's really exciting. So I really appreciate your coming. And my first guest on my new show, not first today, because I'm just going to have one guest today. But my first guest for the whole show is Todd Anderson, Todd Robert Anderson. Welcome, Todd.
Hi, thanks for having me. Well, you know, my booking people didn't tell me what your name is.
Oh, yeah, my name is Ellen Schinderman. So they didn't tell you were coming to the Schindermania show?
No, it's called Schindermania.
Welcome to Schindermania.
Oh, okay.
It's where we discuss all things Schinderman.
Oh. Okay. All right. Excellent.
So those of you not in the know, I am an artist. I tend to use stitch as my medium. I embroider. I needlepoint. Todd is also an artist. Mm. He uses his body and wit.
My two instruments.
As his medium.
That's true. Yeah, I guess that is my medium. Which means I'm art all the time.
Yeah, you are performance art.
I never stop arting.
Don't stop. But that was actually the original lyric to the Journey song.
Don't stop arting.
Yeah. And people were like.
The people were hearing farting.
I don't know what you mean by that.
And sharting. And then it's like, what? What's happening?
And Steve Perry was like, no, guys. It should be believing.
So it's, since your instrument is needle and thread and whatever you put the needle and thread into. What do you call that?
Canvas.
A canvas or that linen. It's always a linen.
Well, it could be anything.
I've what was the stuff my mom used when she had, like, she had the round thing?
Well, she used a hoop.
A hoop?
She hooped up, but she was still using fabric linen.
Just different fabrics.
She was hooping up.
She was hooping it? Yeah, she used to embroider
sayings. Not to be confused with, oh, I'm going to get it wrong. I just learned about a whole new fetish today about people who, you know, furries. But I read a thing today about people who have a thing about inflated toys.
Inflated, you mean like sex dolls?
Well, no. They use them as sex dolls, but I mean like pool toys.
Pool toys? What about those bop bags? Do they use those?
I don't know what that is.
You know those bags that you blow up and it has water or sand at the bottom and kids
I
punch
bet they
them,
do.
And they last for a
I'm
day
because sure
the kids destroy
well,
them?
Apparently within the world of I forget the term. It's either like loonies or something like this or poolies.
Loonies?
Or poolies. It's I just read about it. But there's two distinct groups, one of whom like treasure and cherish their blow-up creature and the other ones who put on like bicycle gear and hump until it explodes.
Bicycle gear?
Well, to like really like leather and stuff so they can really get in there without getting chafed.
Oh. And they hump the
rubber toys
the rubber
to
toys.
Death.
All right. I'm going to reserve judgment. I mean, I think
well, who are we to
if
judge?
If it gets you off, that's awesome.
And it doesn't hurt anyone besides the rubber toy.
Yeah. Yeah, it hurts the rubber, but I suppose that's no crime.
Can you hurt rubber?
I don't think so. I mean, I guess you hurt it in the sense that it pops and no longer works.
Yes, but rubber has no...
It hurts its function.
Yes.
But it doesn't hurt it, you know.
Ow.
It doesn't feel pain or emotional pain.
Why?
Why? Why are you humping me? I'm going to pop. Oh, I popped! You fucking asshole!
So the format of my show is that I'm going to ask you 11 questions.
11?
11.
That's a very specific number.
Well, you know, 10 is good, but this interview show goes to 11.
Oh, it's a Spinal Tap thing. Yeah.
Couldn't help it.
No, it makes sense.
It was right there.
Yeah, it is right there.
Yeah. So, again, being an artist, mm-hmm. myself and yourself, mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, my first question to you was, what was the first piece of visual art that you can remember seeing that you were, that resonated, that affected you?
Well, I don't think I was affected by visual art. I've never been like a huge like fine art guy. I don't go to museums and freak out over paintings and shit. I go to galleries. I'm like, oh, that's nice. Oh, that one's good. Ah, you know, and I get through them quick. I just don't have that, whatever the brain synapse is where you sit and stare at something and you get lost in a painting. I don't have that. But I saw a reproduction of a painting at the World Financial Center when I was in college, which I liked going there because, you know, there were no NYU students there. And I could just, you know, think and just look at the people in suits. And they have that cool, I assume it's still there. They have that cool atrium, you know, uh-huh. the World Financial. So, and in the atrium on like the upper floor, there was a reproduction of a painting called The Storm. Do you know that painting?
Nope.
I can't even remember the name of the artist, but he had a whole series of paintings, you know, from olden times, where it was like the same man and woman in some kind of romantic thing. But in this, it's a storm. The storm's coming. Storm's coming. And
better see to the girls.
And she's covered up and he's keeping her covered up. And he's like looking back at the storm as she's running forward, like having faith in his protection, I guess is the way to put it. But he's like, oh shit, the storm's coming. I don't know. I always liked that painting. And I've wound up, like, and they put it on greeting cards and stuff, and I've got a bunch of those greeting cards.
So that's your painting?
That's my painting, I guess. Yeah, The Storm, I suppose. That would be the one.
Well, I guess my next question was going to be, who is your favorite artist? But I guess it would be him, and you don't know his name.
I don't know his name. I don't think he'd be my favorite artist. I mean, I think the guy who amuses me the most now is Brandon Bird.
Oh, I love Brandon's work.
Just because, I mean, if any art speaks to me directly, it's that. He takes pop culture and he makes it as silly as it is.
And he does it in like super high art, technical, majorly scholared way.
Yeah, I have a print, a limited edition print of one of his paintings, or not, I guess it's a painting, called Lambertback.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I love that. I have it in my living room. And everybody who sees it goes, what is this? Is that Highlander? And I'm not even a bit – my wife loves Highlander. That's why I figured I could get away with putting it up in my living room. I'm not a huge Highlander fan, but that painting – just kills me.
Well, he's wonderful. I mean, Brandon and I share a love of Law and Order.
Yes, and he has the Law and Order SVU.
And he curated Valentine's cards. He curated a show called Law and Order Criminal Intent, for which I did that.
Oh, you did the needlepoint on the wall, which is
it's Lenny and Ed. It's a needlepoint of Lenny and Ed standing in front of the Tompkins Square Market. The piece is called A Lost Customer. And, of course, it says at the top, in the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate – well, you all know, Kung Kung.
Yeah.
And, Brandon's wonderful and talented and nice and smart and terrific. And I think that's a great choice of a favorite artist.
Yeah. I always liked – my brother is a defense attorney, and he gets so mad at the opening of – he finds it so misleading, even though technically it's worded properly. But it makes it sound like there are two sides to the criminal justice system, cops and prosecutors. That's just one side.
What's the other side?
The other side would be the accused and the defense attorneys. There are two sides.
Oh, sure.
But Law and Order makes it seem like it's really just about catching bad guys.
And then prosecuting.
And prosecuting them and putting them away. That's it.
Well, they're criminals.
Well, from the get-go, they're criminals, yes.
I mean, have you seen the people they cast on that show? They are very obviously criminals.
No, they are criminals. They are criminals. Although I did see one criminal on that show who couldn't play the theremin, and he was supposed to be a theremin player.
And I've definitely upsetting. Seen criminals that we went to college with.
Yes. Yes,
or indeed. Camp. Or
yes. I've seen a lot of people I know who are criminals. I have a friend who we didn't go to college with who I met doing a show out here, and he is constantly playing rapists on procedural. His name is Gabe. I call him.
To camp with Gabe Olds. Oh, that's, you know, who I Gabe. Was thinking of too.
We call him Rapey Gabe.
It's really funny. If Gabe is in a show, he did it. And at this point, basically, if Joe Piscopo is in something, he did it as well.
Yeah, that makes sense, though. Joe Piscopo makes sense.
I love that. You know, Gabe, we went to camp together. We did a theater tour together when we were like tweens.
Oh, yeah, I did a short-lived, I had a recurring guest star on a show he was a regular on.
That's really back funny.
10 years ago, 12 years ago now. So long ago.
Okay,
moving along. My career really hasn't taken off. Anyway, what's...
Well, here we are. You're on my show. That's yeah, really no, big
this
deal.
Is, this I'll this get is the Shindermania bump.
Thing.
Yeah.
Question number three, who is your favorite porn artist, living or dead?
Porn artist?
Well...
You mean someone who makes art out of porn?
I mean, that can be.
I mean, I would say probably your pornographic needlepoint is my favorite porn art.
I appreciate that. But if you mean a performer. Or director, I suppose.
I'm not really familiar with the directors all that much. I got to be honest.
Who's your favorite porn artist?
It's like, for me, there's not... I don't really know the porn stars. I know they sell it all according to porn stars, but I'm more of a... I look for the specific situation that I'm interested in, you know, a middle-aged couple seducing a woman. That sounds nice. I'll look at that, you know. But I don't know. I like actresses. I mean, back in when I first started looking at porn, yeah, I mean, the people I liked were – I mean, I liked Behind the Green Door lady, Marilyn Chambers. When I first started looking at porn, it was video. And I remember there was this chick and she had big fake boobs and her name was Madison and she had kind of an annoying voice, but she was always so enthusiastic. And then around the same time, yeah. Well, because there's a lot, I mean, at least when I was a kid, there was a lot of porn that looked, everybody seemed bored.
Oh, they were so bored with the proceedings. In the early, mid-80s.
And now, I mean, I will give modern porn performers this. They're very good at pretending like they're into it. Their acting can be quite good.
Yeah, but they're so fake looking and shorn.
Oh, no, I see what you're saying there. Because I have a friend, we talk about this all the time. He's very much into 70s pubic hair. And I get that. I don't care if you shave it or you don't, you know. I am the kind of guy who's, I'm going to go down on you if, you know, if that is open to me, regardless of what's happening. Yeah, exactly. But shaving, as far as oral sex is concerned, I know there's like a feminist issue about it.
See, honestly, for me, it's all about aesthetics because I look at it from what do I want to do.
When it's art-wise. Porn, you're looking at aesthetics.
And yeah. I find that aesthetic to be very strange.
I understand it. My only thing about it, shaving or manscaping or womanscaping, is that it actually has you know, a logistical, practical reason for existing as far as oral pleasures are concerned.
Yes, but it also infantilizes. Like, it's so strange. It's like, looks like a child.
Absolutely. I understand that. And I don't, I understand the argument. I'm just the argument. No, if your thing is to see shorn vajayjays, you probably have some kind of weird thing. For me,
like the kids today, they think body hair is weird.
Because they have
been raised in a shorn culture.
Well, that's true. But also, I mean, we're sort of evolving away from hairiness. There are way fewer Dan Hedayas in the world now. Even fewer, and I think sometimes it's because they shave the chest, but I think people have less body hair than they used to.
Do you think that's true, or do you think we just see less body hair?
I think it's, well, speaking for, I have no chest hair.
Well, you're very.
And I don't work at it.
What's the opposite
of
her
stoot? So
that
might be part of it. What's that?
What would be the opposite of her stoot? Is there a word that means not hairy?
Gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't know. I don't know. So for me, that's my body type anyway.
Yes.
So that never bothered me.
Well, you don't have a lot of Armenian in you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to my Armenian audience if that was taken the wrong way.
Yes, please. That's racist.
Oh, let me just see who that is.
Oh, yeah. Get the phone. You're taking calls?
Hello? Hey, I got to call you back. Bye.
Oh, so it was a personal call? It wasn't someone calling into your show? This isn't a call-in
show?
That
wasn't a call-in. That was my mother.
Oh, so, hi, Mom.
Moving on.
Right after talking about the ins and outs of pubic hair in pornography. Oh, the other porn star that I was going to say that I used to really like, and I've seen her on the internet since, and she's, you know, middle-aged now, so that's kind of exciting, but is Debbie Diamond. And that's because she is so unbelievably insane.
In what sense?
She's just crazy, and she talks a lot, and she's like overly aggressive, and she was one of the first female porn performers who I ever saw who seemed to be making the men she was with uncomfortable. I like that. That's enjoyable.
All right, so staying on topic. What to you in your mind is the funniest sexual act?
The funniest sexual act?
Because I think that sex, when you're in it, it's amazing and it's tender and it's all those things. But the fact of the matter is, when you step outside of it, it's really silly.
Yeah, when you're not like the only time you see what sex really looks like is if you're this is from a guy's perspective. I don't know what it is like for women, but for me, it's like, as soon as I've blown my wad watching porn, then I immediately have to turn off the porn.
Because you realize
because
what it actually
looks
like. Because
it's like, oh, Jesus Christ, what am I looking at? I've been watching this for 15 minutes? It's so stupid. I'm a fucking idiot.
So that said, what position?
Like sexual position
is the most ridiculous.
Is the most ridiculous
head.
Looking? Golly, I don't know. I mean, I like lesbian scissoring each other looks really silly. Heterosexually speaking, I don't know. Probably.
Have you seen the video of Sarah Silverman scissoring her dog?
No.
For all those of you who have
Sounds
not seen
gross.
It, you have to Google it. There's some billionaire who's offered Mitt Romney like $100 billion for his campaign. And Sarah has offered to scissor him in a bikini if he will not give the money. And then she demonstrates on her dog, Duck, who's this tiny little...
Oh, my God.
In a bikini.
Oh, my God. That sounds terrifying. Good old Sarah. I guess... I don't know. What is stupidest?
They're all pretty silly.
Yeah, I mean... honestly, anything that involves, like, standing up and turning someone upside down looks retarded. I mean, that looks retarded to me when I'm in the mood, I guess. You know, when the guy stands up and picks her up and twists her around so she can suck it while he eats. I'm like, that seems like way too much trouble. Now you're just Cirque du Soleil-ing your porn. That's stupid. That looks uncomfortable.
Okay, what two people would you least like to see do that?
Two people?
Or more.
Do what I just said? I mean, I just said Dan Hedaya. So probably I would not want to see an ultra hairy like Dan Hedaya and Robin Williams in a
vertical
69. Forget that. I don't want it. I don't want it at all.
Okay.
Or, yeah, either of California's recently voted in senators. I don't think I'd want to see either of those ladies doing that either.
What position would you like to see stitched? If I were going to say, hey, Todd, I'm going to make you a piece of needle porn.
Oh, what position would I like to see stitched? Oh man, you know what would be a good one is one where the guy is sort of sideways. It's sort of like almost a heterosexual scissor.
Uh-huh.
You know, but it can't quite be a scissor because that doesn't work.
Something would have to break.
But the heterosexual version of the scissor would be cool to see.
I'm just writing this down in case I need an idea.
There you go.
I think something we all want to know: boxers briefs or boxer briefs, and what color are they today?
I'm doing boxer briefs today. And they're blue.
Is that your druthers?
I like boxer briefs. I mean, I like boxers too. I don't like briefs because I find them constricting and uncomfortable.
Too brief.
Yeah, and they kind of make me feel like I have to pee. But boxer briefs can have the same effect if they're too tight. I like a looser boxer brief, but they're better than boxers. Because if you have to, like, change into shorts or something and you don't have another pair of underwear, if you have boxers, then you run the risk of hanging brains. You know, and nobody wants to see.
Nobody wants to see
that. That's just the tough thing about being a guy is, you know, women have breasts and you can – and they're naughty. But, you know, when everybody's sort of like, oh, sweet, naked breasts – regardless of sexuality or gender, everybody's okay with it. You know, it's okay.
If
it happens, they're like, oh, this is breasts. You know, and some people get really excited and some people are like, oh, okay, it's breasts. But like balls, nobody is like, sweet, did you see those balls?
But you know what? You're wrong.
Do some people like to see balls?
The fact that you just, anything that you can think of, somebody fetishizes. So somewhere out there, there's someone who, it's not just that they want to see balls, it's that they want to see accidental balls. And that's what gets
all right, fetishes notwithstanding. But that all I'm saying is boobs, seeing boobs and liking to see boobs is not fetishized. Whereas if you like to see balls, people are like, that person is weird, regardless of your gender.
You know that guy? He really likes balls.
He loves to see balls.
But, like, he doesn't want to see them, like, hey, can I show you my balls? No. He really gets excited when they accidentally drop out your shorts.
Yeah, he wants to see the accidental balls.
That's his thing.
Yeah, yeah. Accidental balls.
Stuck, chuck, or fuck. This is the political portion of my show.
Stuck, chuck, or fuck?
Yeah, have you never played this game?
I've played marry, fuck, or kill, but
yeah, I think it's the same thing. We used to play stuck, chuck, or fuck when I used to wait tables. So stuck is probably marry, you're stuck with them. Chuck is kill, you chuck them off a cliff, and of course fuck is still fuck.
Oh, okay, so it's the same game.
And this is the political segment of the show. So stuck, chuck, or fuck, Ann Romney, Hillary Clinton, Michelle Obama.
Ann Romney, who is the middle one?
Hillary Clinton.
Oh, Hillary Clinton. Oh, God. I mean, I don't want to fuck. You can't possibly have a good time fucking Romney's wife. I'm sure there's Republicans who have great sex. I'm not saying this in general about Republicans, but Republican politicians seem like it doesn't seem like they're connected to their sexuality. So I can't imagine having any kind of fun with Romney. So I'm just going to chuck her.
Be done with that.
But then the problem is I don't want to fuck or be stuck with Clinton. Michelle Obama, I'd be happy. I'd like to stuck and fuck her, but if I'm bent over,
can I have a fourth option for Hillary?
If I'm bent over a barrel, I guess. Oh God!
I guess you just fuck her once.
Can I fuck Michelle if I'm stuck with her, or are you just stuck with her?
Well,
how does that work?
I mean, I don't know. I've never said. Are there rules if you're stuck with her? Like, if she'll let you fuck her?
Okay, then I'm stuck with Michelle and. Fuck Hillary. Just
the one.
Fall on that grenade.
Okay, and now moving into the entertainment and media portion of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Same question.
Mm-hmm.
Stuck, truck, or fuck? From the cast of Magnum P.I.
Uh-huh.
T.C. Rick Higgins.
Oh, my God. Well, I would fuck T.C. Because if, you know, he'd probably get to do it in a chopper, maybe.
Or at least he'd take you up in a chopper.
Yeah, take me up, treat me right before the fucking. I would probably want to be stuck with Higgins, because he's the most stable of the bunch. He doesn't suffer from any kind of post-traumatic disorder. He tells there long, boring stories.
There was that one time he thought he was a British actor. greatest tradition.
He's got trouble. He's got trouble, but I think it would be amusing. I would like to have this sort of contentious tête-à-tête with him that Magnum does, so I would be stuck with him. And then I'd have to check Rick, because he's very dangerous, and he's friends with mafioso killers. I like Rick a lot, but I think for my own safety, I would have to chuck him. Yeah, yeah.
So, getting my penultimate question.
Mm-hmm.
Again, knowing your liking for Higgins,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you believe Higgins was Robin Masters, and why?
I don't know. It depends on the week. I go back and forth. But I tend to think that he was secretly Robin Masters, because Robin, who we never really see, and we hear a voice, but it could have been, you know, a hired actor.
Orson Welles.
Yeah.
In fact.
Who was a hired actor playing in the show, but maybe Higgins actually hired him to do it. And that would be funny that he hired Orson Welles.
We know that these are not real people.
He's so... What? He's so rich and eccentric that he acts like his own butler, but he has so much money, he can hire Orson Welles to do voice work for this, for his real self, even though he pretends to be Higgins. And Robin obviously loves Magnum so much that he lets him stay there and would make a butler put up with him. I think that Higgins, it seems like Higgins was probably Robin Masters.
Do we ever know how Magnum – oh, I guess he worked for Robin on a case.
He worked for Robin on a case, and yeah, and then Robin said he could stay at his place.
But as far as we know, they never met in person.
No.
On that case.
No. Magnum's never met Robin. He'd never met him. Because Magnum thinks that Higgins is Robin.
Sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. And I remember that one episode where he, like, really lays into him about it, and then Higgins just, like, busts up laughing, can't stop laughing.
Well, I think about it all the time, I mean, week to week, as it were, in that I'm like, well, this wouldn't make sense if he's Robin Masters. And then I'm like, but it wouldn't make sense if he was not.
Yeah, exactly. It's a conundrum, and we may never know.
We may never know.
Because I don't think they're going to make a Magnum
reunion movie. No, but they might make an awful, awful Magnum movie.
Tom Selleck has specifically said in an interview, nobody should ever play Magnum but me.
Oh, I agree.
And while I agree, if someone called me and said, hey, do you want to be the new Magnum? I'd be like, yes.
Hells yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but you know it would be like Jonah Hill.
Oh yeah,
or Seth Rogen, and while I think that they're both fantastic in the right movies,
well, yeah, but that's the thing. You can't. Magnum's a funny show. You don't need to funny it up. You don't need to 21 Jump Street it.
Well,
because it was funny and quirky on its own, and the more straight it's played, the better. And those comics, while wonderful in many occasions, are winky comics. That's the current style of comedy acting is winky. And if it's winky, and Magnum had a winky element that one character had a winky element because he was, you know, an unreliable narrator throughout the whole show and sometimes would look at the camera. But the performance itself, despite those things that were written
was played straight.
And as a result, you got lost in him trying to figure out his cases. Whereas there's no need to make fun of Magnum P.I. It's like,
ironically,
let's put Jonah Hill in like tight shorts that are pulled up too high. Won't that be hilarious? It's like, that's all they're going to be able to come up with. And it'll fall flat because Magnum was already a really funny show. And despite the fashions, the 80s fashions, which Magnum, Tom Selleck wore quite well.
He was quite fit.
He was in great shape, but it was a different shape because he didn't have these cut abs.
No.
He had a flat stomach.
He was in great shape.
Yeah.
Like his legs were really toned and he had like a yoga body.
Right. I much prefer that in shape to today's in shape to the like ripped. 87, you know, ab muscles and like on a Ryan Reynolds torso that just – it looks unnatural to me. But Tom Selleck's in shape was just – he didn't have excess body fat. But he wasn't 0% body fat.
What's his – who's he in Magic Mike?
Matt Channing Tatum.
Channing Tatum. There's a picture of him from that movie where he's all topless and flexing. And his lats are so overdeveloped that he looks like a cobra. His torso looks like a weird cobra.
Yeah, that's what Ryan Reynolds looks like. He's got those weird side
I
mean, God bless him for working so hard.
Hey.
I got not hat my hat's off. I respect these guys for spending all their time at the gym and not having any fun. And that's great, but and I can certainly understand why people – actually, I don't understand why people swoon over those torsos, but Magnum's body was awesome.
Magnum's body was awesome. I mean, it's so funny because I remember at the time that it was on air being like, ew, he's hairy and he has a mustache and I don't understand why he's like a sex symbol. And while I will say that hairy is still not my thing in general, I prefer a man more like Todd.
Oh, my.
Who's smooth. But I will say he is really – and again, the stash is not courant, you know, but
– yeah, there's very few people who get away with a stash.
But he's handsome and he's got really nice eyes. And when he's jogging down the beach in the shorts, his legs are very nice. And I can now as an adult see that Tom Selleck's a very handsome man.
Yeah, and he's super charming on that show. That's the – like the his show now, Blue Bloods, you know, and the Jesse Stone movies. Like I love Tom Selleck.
Yeah.
I mean, like I own all his movies for the most – not the comedies but all
Sharky's
the action
Machine.
Movies. That's Burt Reynolds.
Oh, sorry.
No, like High Road to China, Lassiter, Quigley Down Under.
Oh, yeah.
Runaway.
Okay.
You know, and then there's Three Men and a Baby, of course. I do not own Her Alibi. I don't like him that much.
Do you own Three Men and a Baby?
I do.
Do you own Three Men and a Little Lady?
No, I don't. I do like Three Men and a Baby, and I don't apologize for it.
That's okay. You don't have to.
He had the best line in it, too.
I don't know that I've ever actually seen it.
Oh.
Because I've seen the French version.
Oh, yeah. I never saw the French version.
Which is really
But
funny.
I love Ted Danson.
Well, yeah.
And I love Tom Selleck. So why wouldn't I see Three Men and a Baby? Gutenberg is Gutenberg.
I love Tom Selleck. And I
Gutenberg is he's a staple of the 80s.
Yeah.
I do like Police Academy.
Diner.
Diner, of course, Short
Classic.
Circuit. I saw a lot of Gutenberg pictures.
We all saw it. If you lived in the 80s, you saw a lot of Gutenberg.
But I didn't see Gutenberg movies because Gutenberg was in them.
But he was in them.
But I did see Three Men and a Baby because it had Ted Danson and Tom Selleck.
And I will also say about Magnum, just going back to the basis of this conversation for a moment, the other thing that it has that I think that they would miss if they made a movie now or what have you is a really new age positivism.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's like even like that's what I was saying about Jesse Stone and Blue Bloods. I mean, Tom Selleck's a good actor. I mean, there's no arguing it. But his I guess it's cool to see him dour, but everybody's dour now and humorless, and they're all procedural shows are pretty humorless, and even the so-called quirky ones,
right, the USA
aren't
stuff.
Anywhere near as quirky as Magnum was.
No,
and he was even though he was a guy who suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder and he had this screwed up past and all the women he fell in love with got killed and everything, he was always good humored.
And he really said, and it's funny because, again, when you watch them like really back to back to back to back, which you can on Netflix, folks, you really start to pick up on this message of, you know, if you focus on the good in life, you get good. And why let yourself get bogged down by the negative? And every day I wake up in paradise and I thank the world for a sunrise.
And he is enjoying himself. But when he had to turn on the badass.
Oh, yeah.
He turned on the badass. Like the season – I think it's season three, the one with where his pudgy friend dies.
Oh, Mac.
He gets killed and he's counting the sunsets.
Oh, yeah.
Or the sunrises. I can't remember. It's one
sunsets,
of the two.
Because let's go watch the sunset.
Yeah. And then he says to the guy at the end, he says, did you see the...
Or maybe you're right, it is the sunrise.
I think it's sunrise. He said, did you see the sunrise this morning? And the guy goes, yeah, what about it? And then Magnum just turns around and shoots him. And it's badass.
That's the thing. You actually see very early on, like Magnum, he is such a good guy, but he will actually shoot somebody.
He would kill you.
They would not do that today on television.
If you encroach on his joy of life and his love of the people in his life.
And his friends. He's very loyal to his friends.
If you're darkness, he will turn dark on darkness.
And people smoke on Magnum.
They do. He likes cigars.
Yeah,
he steals
also,
Higgins's
there was that
cigars.
Girl in the hospital, and she couldn't have been more than like 19 or 20, the one whose legs were paralyzed, who turned out not to be paralyzed.
Oh, right.
And she was like, oh, God, I'm dying for a smoke. And he went out and got her a carton.
Yeah. Yeah. Things were different back then. I mean, we all knew smoking could kill you, but it was still cool.
Well, and also
But now you're a pariah if you smoke.
Oh, God. Cigarettes. It's also that thing of, you know, I remember – you know, when we were kids, but growing up in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 80s were so, you know, go-go 80s compared to the, like, really naive, simplistic 70s, like hippie 70s, and now the money 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But watching the 80s now, it really seems so 1950s, vanilla,
right,
and naive.
That's true. Smoking. I'm so sad it got evil.
Well, don't be sad. You know what I decided? I mean, I guess medicine is changing, so 70s isn't old now. But like 80s, I'm going to start smoking cigarettes again.
When you're 80?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Unless medicine advances and I'm like, okay, fine, 90.
I just imagine when I get to be 80, if I haven't smoked for...
No, you'll still want one.
Yeah, but it'll probably taste nasty.
The first one.
I mean, because whenever you... Yeah, the first one. Because whenever you cheat, it's always like, oh, God.
Right, but if you were like, I'm 85, I'm definitely not going to live more than another 10 years, I'm going to smoke again, the first one you'd be like, oh, this is terrible.
And then
you'd have another one and be like, and then you'd be like, okay, wait, I love it again.
Yeah, yeah.
Now pass me that morphine.
I've never had morphine.
No, and I'm going to try Quaaludes.
Where do you get Quaaludes?
I don't know.
You can't get Quaaludes. I have so many friends who are of that generation, the Quaalude generation. They're like, you know what the best drug ever was? It was Quaaludes. It was so great.
Know.
They all say the same thing.
Know,
and I'm sure it's
them.
Like nostalgia and they were youthful at the time. So they recovered quicker. But they're like, there was no hangover and it was just cool. And sex was great
was
on Quaaludes.
Ecstasy,
it was awesome. And I'm like, where do you get Quaaludes? They don't make Quaaludes. Nobody.
Apparently in Mexico.
No. It's not real loot. You
if
know,
you
it's like absinthe.
Show.
It's like you go order absinthe.
Oh,
it's like, that is an absinthe.
That's
it's
absinthe.
Jägermeister, you
no,
asshole.
No, this is made with wormwood and it'll kill you if you drink too much of it.
No, it's not. It's
Chase
Jäger.
The dragon with me.
It's Jäger. It's all it is. It's disgusting.
Oh, Jäger.
Oh, Jäger.
And then my final question for today that I just want you to know that before I had you on today, I put it out to my readers,
mm-hmm.
My listeners, what was their thing that they most wanted to know about you.
Uh-huh.
And they all wanted to know if you are a natural redhead and if the carpet matches the drapes.
I am a natural redhead, and the carpet does match the drapes.
You heard it here on Shindermania.
When I was single, I used to say, if you want to know, there's only one way to find out. And I wouldn't say.
Just ask
that
me.
Never worked. So now I'm just like, yeah, I got red hair.
Yep, it's red.
Red hair. Although I grew a goatee because I was on vacation, and I got gray hair on my goat. It's gray.
Yeah. But that happens. You know, look, I mean, some men go gray younger than others.
Well, 40s when...
I have a friend who's 32 who's a very salt and peppered already.
Yeah, well, and Steve Martin handsome. Was like peppery when he was 30.
Steve Martin was peppery when he came out his mother's womb.
He just got a lot of bad scares, I guess. So strange. But yeah, I was kind of sad. But it may also have been that I was on a cruise and I realized once I was trapped on a large ship that I've watched way too many disaster films involving cruise liners.
Oh, yeah.
Because I would wake up because I can't – when I fly, I can't sleep because I always dream I'm – the plane's crashing, oh, and when I wake up, I'm like in a cold sweat, and it's always like turbulence that wakes me up, and I'm like, and there's like a moment of panic, and because of that, and because they, I heard so many people say on a cruise ship, you won't feel it, you won't feel the rocking
when you hit the.
That's
iceberg.
Bullshit. All you feel, all I felt was rocking. There was rocking. And then at night, you know, when they hit rough waters, I don't know, they were firing engines and stuff and my bed would shake.
But
you
that
know,
was like Free Magic Fingers.
Yeah, for a second to like terrify you, like wake up. And then plus we live in Southern California. So I would wake up going, is that an earthquake? Of course it's not an earthquequeI'm on a boat. What the hell is that?
Sequence.
Speed to cruise control. It's Willem Dafoe. Yeah, so I would wake up in the middle of the night, but like
you, Jack.
Too much rocking or something, and then I would be terrified that I would, you know, have
and
to scramble
your wife
with
and
my
child
family
just
to
slept through everything.
My kid sleeps through anything. He had no problem sleeping. My wife had similar difficulties at times because it would get quite loud, and then we were up near the bow, so when we got to port. And they'd get to port at like 6 in the morning. They'd drop anchor. And that's really loud.
The anchor dropping.
Oh, it's very loud. It takes a long time. It's a really, really big chain.
A lot of chain.
Hacking against a metal hull. And it, and the water's quite deep.
And your porthole is right there. did you, when you, like the first day, did you suss out where all of the lifeboats –
Yeah, oh yeah, we knew where all the lifeboats. Well, you go through a whole safety thing.
Oh.
You go to the what the hell is it called? There's a name for it. I'm forgetting the name already. I've put it out of my head. But you go to a special, everybody is assigned a special place.
Right.
Each group, and you go to your special place, and if, you know, if your kid is in camp and you're at the thing and something happens, all minors have to wear wristbands. So they all go to the same place. So the families get together and then they put you on the lifeboats. So there's a whole emergency process that they first – before they set sail, they have to
– Wow, they do a drill.
Yep. Everybody's got to go.
Before you set sail.
Yep. Yep.
That's a little scary.
It's well, no, it wasn't. It was –
Welcome to the pleasure cruise.
Yes.
Before we depart.
In case you die.
If your child has been separated from you, you'll be issued a wristband.
Yeah. Well, that's why they have wristband. I was like, oh, that actually makes sense.
It does, but it's also like in my mind, I'm like seeing like Hunger Games.
Right, like, right. Well, I'm sure there's like a certain amount of panic if the alarm sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
you would think. Have you seen Titanic?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw Titanic. It's not really Titanic that scares me as much as Poseidon Adventure.
Oh, yeah, that's
like
a good
that.
One. When they shove Shelley Winters up that tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but she turns out to be an Olympic swimmer somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was good.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
That's a good movie. I don't know. The remake people didn't like, but I didn't mind it so much.
I don't believe in remakes.
With Kurt Russell?
They don't happen in my world.
No?
Mm-mm.
I mean, it's dumb and bad, but it's like 90 minutes of a ship sinking.
Yeah, no, it's okay. They didn't remake Manchurian Candidate. They didn't remake.
They didn't remake Manchurian Candidate. They made a different movie called Manchurian Candidate. Well, that movie, that remake, I was just like, for one.
You saw it?
Yes. I was like, for one, why?
It's a perfect movie.
If you're not going to, it is a perfect movie, but it's a perfect movie that, yes, which they did, because Frank Sinatra buried it when it first came out.
I know.
So nobody knew about it. But also, it's called The Manchurian Candidate for a very specific reason.
Because of it's Manchuria?
Yes. It has to do with Cold War, you know, paranoia. And
the Korean War.
And all this U.S. military history. And yeah, exactly.
I was lovable. She was lovable. We were all so damn
but
lovable.
Then the Manchuria in the remake is a fucking corporation. It's like a name of a company. And I was like, why? Why would anyone name their fucking company Manchuria?
Wouldn't it be that kind
doesn't
of
make any sense? Well, it's racist and it has odd connotations and it's kind of terrifying sounding. It's like why would it's like naming your new corporation. I'm starting a new corporation, an umbrella corporation called the Iron Curtain. That doesn't make any sense.
Called Slavia.
It doesn't make any sense. And so they did this it's this convoluted corporate conspiracy theory movie. It's horrible.
Well, for all of my listeners listening, if you've never seen either the original or the remake, there is no remake, but go out and rent the original. It is fabulous with Frank Sinatra.
It's really scary.
Angela Lansbury is so good.
And Henry Silva's in it.
Oh, and I was Henry Silva's fantastic.
I was at an audition one time, a commercial audition, and he was there. And he was signing in. And there was back when they took Polaroids. They don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But they used to take Polaroid pictures. And the casting assistant, who I'm sure saw the remake of Manchurian Candidate, because it's got Denzel Washington
and
Meryl Streep.
Ocean's 11.
Yeah, I'm sure. And she had no goddamn idea who Henry Silva was. And she took a Polaroid and it looked awful, which they do anyway. But he was like, hey, can I get another one? She's like, no, they're really too expensive and it doesn't matter. I mean, he's like, come on, let me do it. And she's like, no, if I did that for every actor. And I was like, you don't have to do it for every actor, but you have
he's
to do it for Henry
Silva.
You don't – oh, my gosh. I was upset and worried for Henry Silva.
Did it affect your audition?
Yeah, I was bitter when I went in. I was bitter. I was like, if I have to get more successful than Henry Silva to get any respect, this is horrible. I don't know if I can be that successful.
Just this level is killing me.
It just hurt. It hurt my soul. Deeply. Anyway.
Well, Todd, I really want to thank you for coming on today.
Oh, thanks for having me on your Shindermania program.
Yeah. It's been a good time.
Yeah, indeed.
I guess we'll play a little outro music, and you and I can sit here and finish our cocktails.
Great.